It's the Who's On First Baseball Show with the coach, Carl DeMasi, and the baseball fanatic, Kyle Lawson.
The fellow's name on first base.
Who?
The guy on first base.
Who is on first?
Talking all things baseball on the Coach's Corner Sports Network.
I'm not asking you who's on second.
Who's on first?
I don't know. Third base.
Woo! And here we are, the coach and the baseball fanatic. Hello, sports fans. It's the Who's On First Base Baseball Podcast with the coach, Carl DeMasi, and the baseball fanatic, Kyle Lawson. Remember, this is all brought to you by the Coach's Corner Sports Network. We have five shows on the Coach's Corner Sports Network. We got Rubbin' and Grubbin' Wednesday nights, 7 o'clock, NASCAR, where they talk about, they rub, they grind, but they also grub food from John Henderson. I'm jealous of those guys, but Rubbin' and Grubbin', you'll love it. NASCAR show, they do a great job. Then it's the coach and AD, the Carl DeMasi Sports Report, at 7 o'clock with a Wednesday night live update. Then the coach and AD come back on Saturday mornings at 9 o'clock and do our whole local sports scene show from Coach's Corner every Saturday morning. Then we have two podcasts. These guys are up to 58 podcasts already. If you haven't listened to it, you got to go to it. It's a lot of fun. You got the Hot Grits podcast with Spencer Maddox, Travis Jordan. It's adultish, but they'll talk everything from the Atlanta Hawks, the Atlanta Braves, to any unusual thing that's going on in sports. They'll break it down for you. Then, of course, back in the saddle again, playing some baseball. It's the coach, Carl DeMasi, and the baseball fanatic, Kyle Lawson, with the Who's On First Base Baseball Podcast. This is episode number 3. We're bringing it back after 4 years on the radio, or radio as we call it. Okay, the coach and the fanatic are back here doing a podcast. We'll be doing it every week, coming out every Wednesday, and it's a lot of fun. Because on Thursday, we got Play Ball. Kyle, we're back.
Oh, we are back, Coach. It's my favorite time of the year. I love opening day. It's my favorite holiday. It is what it is. Going to get some friends together on the 1st, coming up this Thursday, April 1st. All teams will be playing, and I can't wait. It's going to be a lot of fun, and we're going to have a full season. As of right now, we are playing 162. There's going to be fans allowed back into the ballpark in limited capacities. And it's going to be a lot of fun. I plan on spending the whole day in front of the TV watching every game I possibly can.
The Braves, who we're going to concentrate on in a couple of minutes, they'll be at Philadelphia, 3:05 first pitch. You got to love it. You know, coming into the season, 2 weeks ago, we picked out who's going to do what in division. In the AL East, okay, we picked the Yankees. Toronto will be pesky, okay. In the NL West, we said the Dodgers would be sure shot.
One of the toughest divisions in baseball, without a doubt, though.
And, of course, in the NL East, you got one of the toughest divisions also. You know, so the NL seems like the superior league this year. Do you think so?
Well, I think the races are going to be a little bit tighter in the NL versus the AL. But, I mean, there are going to be stories throughout the season right now. You know, I mean, we talked about, yeah, I mean, the Dodgers – could possibly have one of the great historic seasons of all time. They go out and add Trevor Bauer. They have basically, they have three number ones. It's unbelievable. And then you look at the Padres, a team that definitely looks playoff bound. They go out and add Yu Darvish. We talked about that. One of the most fun young players in baseball with Fernando Tatis Jr. It's going to be tough, but they'll be battling it out year. But I see no way that anybody is going to beat the Dodgers in that division. And earlier we were talking about the AL West. Now, we always have the pesky Oakland A's. That's a fun ball club. I enjoy watching them. Houston is still, I think, probably the class of that division. Texas has taken a little bit of a step back. And of course, you mentioned before you felt that the National League races were, or at least you felt the National League would be a little bit superior as far as talent. I'm not quite so sure outside of the West, because, I mean, there's some talented divisions in the AL. I mean, without a doubt.
Well, it's going to be pretty interesting. And like you said, I'm still not giving up, ship on the Astros. I think they have a very, very good pitching staff. I mean, a lot of people are counting them out already. You can't count them out. I think that pitching staff will keep them in there. You know, even though Verlander is injured to start the season off, which brings us to the next point. You got to deal with all these big injuries to start off the season also, Kyle.
Yeah, you really do. I mean, there's some big names that are out right now. You look at first baseman Luke Voit for the New York Yankees, torn meniscus. He's going to be out at least a month, and then he'll be reevaluated. The big one, and this is a team that we talked about in the AL Central, a team that I feel is going to be the class of the AL Central, and that, of course, is the Chicago White Sox. They're a power-hitting young stud, Eloy Jimenez. Torn pectoral muscle, very painful, 5 to 6 months minimum. And then you come back after your rehab, and you don't know what kind of ball player you're going to have left. That's the one that happened last week. Just, you know, regular, just freak injury that happened. That's a very painful injury. Now, another one that gets me is, as Seattle is building one of the best farm systems in baseball, they're the 2020 AL Rookie of the Year, Kyle Lewis. He has got a pretty nasty bone bruise. There was a collision. He went for a fly ball against the wall. He's doubtful for the opening doubtful for opening day. He could be out at least a month.
You got to go to the Yankees. They lose Luke Voit there.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, and that's what I was mentioning about Luke Voit. Yeah, I mean, that torn meniscus. And, I mean, he's elected to have surgery, so it's going to be an arthroscopic situation. They're hoping it's just a month. And that, I mean, again, you know, Brian Cashman said it's going to be evaluated on a day-to-day basis after he has that surgery. We don't expect to see him until May. Now, one other big move. Now, you mentioned the Astros before. One of the members of that Astros World Series team several years ago, George Springer, signs a deal, goes up to Toronto, and he's going to be on the DL to start the year. And he could be out at least a month as well. So fairly big names on the DL to start the year. And let's just say the Braves are a little bit no stranger to this. It's been well documented that Mike Soroka obviously only made 3 starts last year before he tore his Achilles, very painful injury. But he's pitched in some sim games, and he could be ready to go by the end of the month. But the Braves have a very deep pitching rotation, and hopefully that'll mask the loss of Soroka for at least the first month. And then Touki Toussaint, one of the top prospects in the Braves system, having a terrific spring, hurts his shoulder, and he is put on the 60-day injured list, as they would say now, and he could be out the whole year. So there's really no timetable for his return per manager Brian Snitker.
Okay, you're listening to the Who's on First Baseball podcast with the coach, Carl Tomasi, and the baseball fanatic, Kyle Lawson. We did this for 4 years. We're continuing it on the podcast circuit now. We're going on the junior circuit now with the podcast. So, but anyway, we're having a lot of fun doing it. And talking about the Braves, you talk about Touki. I call him Touki Toussaint, but it's Toussaint, okay? But he goes on the injured list, okay? Not the disabled list, the injured
list.
The
injured list, the 60-day.
You got to be politically correct because we can't call them the Cleveland Indians anymore. So hopefully they'll be called the Cleveland Spiders, going back to their history. But anyway, let's concentrate now on the Braves, okay? The Braves are picked to be the 4th best team in Major League Baseball this year. They got a lot coming back. Your lineup is star-studded, okay? You have the MVP coming back, and you have a guy that is now right behind him in the lineup that's going to keep him secure. They're dropping him down to the 3-hole. So let's break down the Braves.
Okay, so and we were talking about opening day starts. Of course, you brought up Freddie Freeman, brings me to, you know, a great stat. He is he's at least in the top 10. This is his 11th opening day, start for the Braves. And I mean, quietly won the MVP last year, having a terrific season. The lineup's pretty well set. A couple of big moves have been made to try to fill out the bench. Now, Brian Snitker is going to go the bullpen had some concerns last year. They're going to run with a 10-man bullpen to start the season because the last end of the rotation is a little bit in flux right now. But they're going to go with a 4-man bench, and there was a lot of tough decisions that needed to be made. So, Coach, talk a little bit about some of the guys that are going to round out that bench. What do you think?
Well, there's 4 guys coming. There's 4 guys that they're keeping, right?
One guy that I really liked that I think could fill in, and also, you know, with updated, getting the updates here, Dansby Swanson, he had an MRI. He's got a torn ligament in his hand. He's had some hamstring issues. He may not be ready to go, but they did pick up a guy that provides you some depth in that infield, and that's Aure Adrianza. You know, he's been kind of a journeyman ball player, had some time in Minnesota. Had a terrific spring, batted over 400, showing a little bit of power. He's a switch hitter. He can play all 4 positions in the infield. don't be surprised if he's not only filling in a little bit at third base to help out Austin Riley. He could also be your opening day second baseman, you know, with Dansby, shortstop, with Dansby being a little bit beaten up.
Had a really good spring training with a batting average of .433. So I think that's why they're keeping him around, with six extra base hits in 19 Grapefruit League exhibition contests. So, what really surprises me, they keep Nate Jones. He's 35 years old. What do you think that's all about?
Nate Jones, he will be able to give you some innings. He's a good middle reliever. He had some terrific years with the Chicago White Sox, and he really showed him a lot in the spring. And that's a team that desperately needs a buffer to get to guys like Will Smith, you know, in the eighth and ninth inning. Will Smith is obviously going to be your closer. I called that a couple of weeks ago because that's your best option out of that bullpen. They also kept Grant Dayton. And don't be surprised, you know, if you're going to see some names come up from the alternate site. Brian Snitker had some really tough decisions to make. And also they're bringing back Pablo Sandoval, a guy that was definitely not a lock to land on the roster. But I think it's more of what he brings just as a veteran presence. He's a World Series champion. You know, all those great years he had with the Giants. He's going to be a bat off the bench, and they're going to keep him. And they also had some tough decisions to make as far as some infield depth. They let go of Jake Lamb and Jason Kipnis, you know, guys that have had great careers. Really bad springs, though. Jake Lamb struck out over 30% of his at-bats here in the Grapefruit League. He was slated to be the backup for Austin Riley opening day, and that's definitely not going to happen. So they were given their release. We'll see if they get caught, they catch on with some other teams.
I mean, it just surprised me that they're going so thin on the bench, though, and they're putting all their eggs in a basket. Happy Easter, okay? They're putting all their eggs in a basket with the pitching staff. Now, you know what I know? You got to have some people coming off the bench, and I just think I'm worried. I always worry about the pitching, but I think they're leaving themselves thin if the injury bug takes place. I mean, Well, we talked about it. William Contreras, okay, we thought he was going to be Darnaud's backup, all right, but they're sending him down. They're keeping Alex Jackson. You know, Freddie Freeman's going to play first. Albies at second. O'Reilly at third. You know, Dansby at short. You know, but the outfield, I mean, you're only leaving yourself one choice, okay? Ronald Acuña, Christian Pache, Marcell Ozuna. Who else are they going to have out there with them?
Ender Inciarte can fill in the outfield. We know what he can do defensively. He's going to be filling in. And Christian Pache, it is his time to come up. He has struggled at the plate, but he is your center fielder of the future for the Atlanta Braves. No question about it. They've got four solid outfielders that can do the job. And Adrianza can play the outfield if you need to. He's kind of those plug-and-play guys. You look at guys that have had good careers like that, like Ben Zobrist. We could play them in the infield or the outfield if you needed to. Multi-purpose players. I'm not too worried about it, Coach.
You got one in the outfield and three in the infield. So you're leaving yourself four reserve players on the bench, okay? And now this is what we go to every year, the pitching, okay? You got Morton, you got Freed, you got Anderson and Smiley. Your fifth starter is who now?
So as of right now, this is an interesting thing. The Mark Bowman, that's covered the Braves for years on MLB.com, when they roll around to that fifth spot, what they're going to do, they are going to actually do a bullpen game. So let's say probably the 6th or 7th of April, you're going to see a bullpen game. Long reliever like Huascar Ulloa, he's going to come in and probably start that game, and then they're going to turn it over to that bullpen. That's the reason they're keeping that so deep. Now, Bryce Wilson, who we both thought would end up with the club, they've decided they want him to go down and get some innings at the alternate site in Gwinnett. Don't be surprised he makes two starts before Mike Soroka comes back. So you're going to see a lot of moving parts. I guarantee you're going to have at least seven different pitchers starting for the Braves this year.
So how do you think Camargo is taking all this?
Look, he's still – I mean, he just flat out couldn't make the club. He goes to the alternate site. He's still there. And if you're playing a full season, I think he knows as a veteran he's probably going to be able to get some games with the Braves this year. But he was not the best option. When Austin Riley beat him for that third base job, he really struggled after that. there's still some talent there. So hopefully he can figure out and tweak a few things in Gwinnett and get back to where he needs to be. I still say he could be a valuable bench piece, and he may get some starts before, or get some appearances, I should say, before the rosters expand in September.
All right. And, you know, the bullpen was the big hurt last year, but you're keeping Smith, Martin, Matzik, Minter, which I love, Jones, Jackson, Newcomb, Dayton, Tomlin, and Yona. I don't know. Don't you think it's overkill? Don't you?
No,
I know you're going to go to that fifth game and you're going to pitch by committee, you know, but I just think it's overkill, 10 relievers.
Well, you know, and that's been mentioned too on multiple platforms, but I really think they know what they're doing to start off the season right now. You need to go pitching heavy right now. They have a ton of power. Everybody is very healthy. The Braves were one of the few teams to actually get through spring training with an entirely healthy roster. Of course, Mike Soroka's coming off an injury. Doesn't really count. Dansby's a little bit banged up. They've got a really solid lineup to start this season. And don't be surprised, they shift things around. They send a couple of relievers down, bring up some bench guys from the alternate site as they need. Because, I mean, they sent guys down like Philip Irvin, you know, guys that have a little bit of speed. They can give you some depth in the outfield. Of course, we mentioned Camargo. I mean, there are a lot of moving pieces right now. Keep in mind, we also get 26. We get a 26-man roster this year.
Right.
So this is just to start the year. I'm very comfortable with what the Braves are doing.
And it's play ball, April 1st, Thursday, April 1st, 3:05 in the city of brotherly love in Philadelphia. So once again, and remember, you're listening to the Who's on First Base baseball podcast with the coach, Carl DeMasi, and of course, the baseball fanatic, Kyle Lawson. So we focused a little on the injuries that have hurt some teams. We talked about the Braves, what's going to happen. Okay, Thursday, April 1st, down in Philadelphia, up in Philadelphia, in the city of brotherly love at 3:05. But you know what? They took their shtick on the road to the One World Tour city of Mobile, Alabama. The Bananas sold it out, and there's no other way to bring this in. We got to talk about it. We're going to talk about Bananas every week. But the broadcast entertainer, I call him the internet's broadcast entertainer, the man that is the wizard of the whiteboard, but he didn't have to use it Friday or Saturday, our friend Biko Scala, the voice of the Savannah Bananas. What's up, Biko?
Hey, not so much, Carl. Kyle, great to join you guys. Yeah, they were nice enough in Mobile that we actually got to bring some cameras, and I didn't have to have the camera on me for 3 hours with the whiteboard. So, you know, I think we might even go back there, do it one more time next year.
And did you bring a whiteboard with you anyway, just in case something might happen?
No, I think, you know, I probably should have, like, you know, break glass in case of emergency, a whiteboard with me at all times. I haven't thought of that, but you know what? That's why you get paid the big bucks. I think that's something I'll take with me in the future.
Well, going on an old baseball cliche, the Savannah Bananas hit it out of the park both nights. I love listening to you. You know, hold it. This is my little buddy, Kyle. You know, another guy from New York, a little Italian in him. But, you know, he sounded a little serious Friday night. I don't know if you got my message. I said, so serious tonight, Biko. But then you started to relax. You started to be who you were. I mean, were you a little nervous that you were in a city that you never, you know, called a game in?
Yeah, you know, maybe the ghost of Hank Aaron just got me a little tight there over there, down there in Mobile, Alabama. I think I was just fired up. And the thing is, too, especially when you're in a new place and you're playing a relatively new game, you know, that was my sixth banana ball broadcast at that point. So I can't say I'm a rookie anymore. But banana ball flies so much quicker than baseball. And, you know, baseball, it's one of the most unique sports to broadcast because there's so much story time. You know, in a 3-hour game, there's about 15 minutes of action. So you're used to working in your stories and stuff, and all of a sudden, you know, no one's stepping out of the box. I'm trying to tell a guy's life story who's played on 4 different continents, and all of a sudden he's gotten 6 pitches in the blink of an eye. So, yeah, you know, I think it did. It probably took me a few innings to settle down there in Mobile, but the stadium was electric. And, I mean, I had chills through basically the entire half-hour pregame show. And I think I probably had a little extra adrenaline in me that I needed to get out of me to really call the game as best I could.
Good. Fanatic, throw one at the kid.
All right, so I had the chance to watch. I mean, by the way, some great videos. I finally got to go back and actually watch everything and just see how much the fans really enjoyed it. And, I mean, it was a packed house 2 days in a row. What were your thoughts on the stadium itself? I mean, it's, you know, it's Hank Aaron Field in Mobile, Alabama. Of course, you know, that's where the great Hank Aaron is from. And what was the fan reception? Did you get a chance to talk to any of the fans?
So I didn't get a chance to talk to one of the fans myself, but after every game, we debrief with the whole staff and talking with them and the players. I mean, and just seeing video, you know, we have the great Ben Sheffield out there talking to fans and getting their, you know, live reactions of what's going on. It was really amazing. And, you know, Mobile is an awesome baseball city. Like you were asking about Hank Aaron Stadium. And it's only been around for 23 years. There's an $8 million stadium back in 1997. It's beautiful. And, you know, no, I won't say anything here nor there, but the Bay Bears won, you know, about a $60 million stadium. And that's why they jumped ship after 2019. And it's hard for me to understand because it's Hank Aaron Stadium. I mean, what do you want? It's Hank Aaron Stadium. It's awesome. The atmosphere there was unbelievable. I know in talking to the employees there that they weren't getting 3,500 people in the stadium on, you know, most nights. They said that the two crowds that we saw there this past Friday and Saturday night were the most electric crowds they had seen in probably the past decade or so. So the fans were definitely hungry, and I'm sure, you know, you take baseball away for them for over a year, and then all of a sudden you bring it back with all the flair the Bananas have. The electricity, you could feel it in the stadium, and the fans, the sounds that they told our people was really, really cool to see.
Well, Carl, go ahead. No, but I was just saying, that's so relatable, you know, especially here in Savannah. I mean, you know, we lose the Sandnats that, you know, we had, you know, South Atlantic League ball for so many years. And of course, they jump ship and move. And of course, they had double A ball in Mobile, you know, with double A Southern League, you know, for all those years as well. Yeah. I mean, just to have that back, I mean, just what a thrill. What I loved the most was you could see people out there wearing bright yellow. They're wearing, you know, they're wearing Bananas colors. Everybody was out there buying those jerseys. I can't believe how much merch they probably sold. Yeah.
I drove the U-Haul down, you know, it's at the bottom of my resume, but U-Haul driver, you know, underneath all the internet broadcast entertainer whiteboard wizard, you throw the big truck driver in there. I actually drove it down and back, and it was probably, you know, it was a 15-foot U-Haul, and half of it was merch, and almost all of it is still in Mobile because it was purchased. So it was definitely really cool to see how fired up the fans were, and, you know, in general, Bananas gear, it's just, if you see it and you don't have something from the Savannah Bananas, there's something that draws you to it. You gotta have a Savannah Bananas shirt, you know? I will tell you this, though. I was surprised how many folks came into the stadium wearing Savannah Banana gear already. And I know there were not a lot of folks who made the 8-hour trip from Savannah. So it was a real cool mixture of seeing all these people, you know, actually getting gear in the stadium, but I'll tell you, I want to say like 30, maybe 40% of the folks came in already repping Bananas gear that I'm sure they had to have ordered online.
I mean, like Kyle said, watching the videos and watching me getting to watch the, you know, Baseball Insider broadcast. It was all, I felt bad for the party animals, even though the party animals are giving the Bananas premier team a hard time. You know that, Pico.
Oh, I know it. I'll give you a little inside scoop. You know who is most scared, and I'm sure you can take a guess, who is most scared that the party animals were going to win on Saturday night?
Jesse Cole.
The man, yeah, you're right, the man in the yellow jacket.
The man himself.
Oh, he was stressing because the teams were really evenly divided.
No, they are.
You know, the Bananas took night one, but the party animals took night two and then took the first night in Mobile. And man, they had some really good talent on both sides. I said this multiple times on the broadcast. I'm a Bananas guy, but the party animals, I'm all in on them. I mean, everything they do, like especially under Adam Morrow's leadership, these guys were a collection of professional baseball players who had been all over the world, and they fully bought in on being the heel and being the villain and, you know, throwing push-ups down when they got hits and runs and sprint all over the place and playing beer pong during the game and throwing a football around while, you know, the Bananas were trying to, you know, perform something. Like, it was really a lot of fun, and I think the Party Animals, they really knocked it out of the park as well. It was a great juxtaposition for all of the fun that the Bananas are.
And you're listening to the Who's on First Base baseball podcast with the coach, Carl DeMasi, the baseball fanatic, Kyle Lawson, and the broadcast entertainer on the internets, Biko Scala. Okay, Biko, when's the next game coming up for the Bananas? Are we waiting to the CPL, the Coastal Plain League, starts? Or do we have some kind of in-between exhibition game between the Animals and the Bananas again?
No, we're going to have a good month and a half off. The end of May, the CPL season will start back up. And then, you know, 28 home games and about that many on the road as well. So I'll tell you what, I love this Premier team and the spring series. I think it couldn't have gone any better, and it's definitely something that's going to be built on, and I'm sure we'll see more of it, more games, maybe even a couple more cities next summer. But I'm also unbelievably excited to have some college kids back in Grayson Stadium and have a full, you know, 60-game season and see these kids play their heart out for the Bananas and take on the Bacon and the Blowfish and the new rival in town, the Spartan Burgers. So it'll be a really great CPL season. I'm jazzed. I'm really jazzed.
Yeah, and yeah. The Spartan Burgers. Did you know that, Kyle? We got the Spartan Burgers now. We got the Making Bacon.
Oh, I knew it. I was about to say, it's like, all right, well, if you want to have a team name, I was about to say, in line with the Bananas, Spartan Burgers fit right in. Are you kidding me? And, of course, you start the season, you know, on the 27th, taking on your wonderful rivals, the Macon Bacon. You'll be taking on the Lexington County Blowfish. And these games are already sold out. I mean, I was looking at tickets today. You can't get one until at least June.
Well, yeah, you know, it's tough because before we had this whole pandemic, it was 88 straight sellouts. And then you have the pandemic, you have to cut the people coming in half. You don't actually cut the people in half. You cut half the people can't come. You know, you get what I'm saying.
You cut down the tents.
Yes. Yeah, it's like you can cut a banana in half, you cut a burger in half, you cut the bacon in half, but you can't cut the people in half.
Right. So, you know, you already have a product that there's so much demand that people are on a wait list in a normal seat, and then you have to call up half of the folks who already have their tickets to these sold-out games and say, I'm sorry, you know, you can't come. So hopefully this summer, there's still going to be a little bit of a restriction, but as the vaccine gets into more and more people, I think we'll have, you know, more and more people be allowed to be inside Grayson Stadium. It was obviously an enormous success last summer, being outside and socially distanced and not having any outbreaks at all. You know, it was crazy because we were the first team to play baseball in the summer of 2020. Major League Baseball started up a few weeks after us, but it was really, at the end of it all last summer, it was a great way to just sit back and say, oh my gosh, we made it through. None of the players ever got it, none of the coaches, none of the staff. Like, that was really cool. So to now know that it'll be even safer this summer and we can get more people in there and the atmosphere will even be that much more electric. And there's a lot of really good returning guys, a lot of really good guys who are going to be Bananas for the first time this summer. Basically, now it's my turn to dive into my research for the CPL season. So it's been fun to start looking up all these college guys, and there's going to be some studs. It's going to be a really good team. And, of course, as you said, I wouldn't start it any other way than facing the Macon Bacon on May 27th. I mean, that's how you got to get it going, right?
Well, absolutely.
Biko, all I got to tell you is if you thought Mobile, Alabama was electric, wait till you see Grayson Stadium sold out with 4,500 crazy Savannians or the people from the Savannah area. You want to talk about electricity? Air Shark. I mean, I know he got a little nervous last weekend when Saturday night he starts off the game with, take me out to the ball game. And then Jesse's down there yelling, no, Shark, I don't think so. And then you hear, oh, say, can you see? I mean, it was just great. It was typical banana motif. And you know what? It might have been a mistake, but I'm telling you right now, the fans loved it. The people watching online loved it. hey, you guys got to have a lot of fun. That's what it's all about. Fan first with a lot of fun.
Yeah, Carl, I would be lying to you if I said that wasn't like a top 10 funniest moment in my life. That was, and I said this to everybody after the game too, because one of the really nice pieces of Heron Stadium is Shark was just separated by a pane of glass, a window that we could slide in and out so we could chat with each other. That was super cool because in Grayson, obviously I'm up in the booth, he's down in Shark with the crowd. So I'm staring at him. I've got the broadcast is picking up his audio. It's his show now, you know, he's on the field. He's on the internet, as you call him. And I see it. He says a one, a two, and then he goes back a 1-2. And once he gets to that second two, I'm telling you, Carl, I would have bet $100 that he was about to start singing Take Me Out to the Ball Game. I had a feeling in my gut. It was the way he was approaching it. I was like, he's not about to start singing the national anthem. And then as soon as he said, you know, take me out to the ball game, I think I already had tears coming down. I couldn't even bang on the window soon enough. Jesse was on the mic, like you said, saying, Shark, national anthem. And I did a little poll of all the people who worked for the Bananas, the players, and some fans. And almost everybody thought that it was planned because Jesse really played it off well. And then Shark was able to pick up, you know, the correct song. I know that, you know, we may want Take Me Out to the Ball Game to be the national anthem, but that's not in the books yet. So he was incredibly embarrassed, but laughing, and, you know, I don't think it would have been played off any better, and I'm sending him the video, actually, tonight when I get into Queens, because it's turned into a really legendary moment for a guy who does an amazing, amazing job. You know, it was a steak that ended up being a really funny one.
Well, Biko, appreciate you coming on. Safe drive home, and once again, can't wait to get back here in May, and we'll be starting going a little bananas again, and it's going to be electrifying in Grayson Stadium for you. You haven't called any games with the packed house yet. You're going to see what it's like.
Oh, I'm psyched. Kyle, thank you so much for having me. This
really appreciated, Biko. Can't wait to see you out of Grayson this year.
We'll talk to you, Biko.
See you, Big Tigers. Thank you so much.
The kid loves what he's doing. He does a great job. You know, you got
really does.
Mark
really
Eaton, the Shark, in the stadium. You got him on the internet, and I'm telling you, they do a great job. They work off each other. And that's how it used to be in Grayson Stadium, if he's still listening. Where Biko announces now, that's where Shark used to be. And right next door where they put the balls and strikes up on the scoreboard, that's where the internet broadcaster would be. I know. I did a game from there. I did a couple of games from there. Shark's right next to you. He just blows you away. But, you know, they changed it. He's back in the crowd. So, once again, it's a great show. You're going to get the real thing coming up May 22nd. You're going to get the real thing coming up May 27th against the Macon Bacon, so it should be a lot of fun. You're listening to the Who's on First Base baseball podcast with the coach, Carl DeMasi, and the baseball fanatic, Kyle Lawson. And this is where we get out the door. We're going to go three innings right here, three innings of trivia questions. That means three questions, two questions each inning. He beat me last week 3-0. Yes, I got shut out. So, and I should have known Denny McClain and Bob Gibson, because that's from my youth. When I watched the Cardinals and the Tigers play in 68. But you know what? You got me on that one. So are you ready to go for a little trivia, Mr. Baseball Guru?
I am ready, Coach. What do you got for me? Lead
me
off.
First, it's opening day. Let's see. Dave. Okay, let's see if you can get this one. Who threw out the first pitch back in 1910?
For opening day? Oh, that's the heaviest president of all time, William Howard Taft.
You got me on that one, but I'm going to keep an opening day. I thought that would be fairly easy for you. But, yes,
Washington,
you're up.
Senator.
Okay, you're up 1-0.
Okay, here's what I got for you. Who has the most career leadoff home runs?
In baseball?
Correct. For a
in
career.
In baseball?
Correct. In Major League Baseball.
I got to go with Ricky Henderson.
Boom. Got it. 1-1. Very good.
The man was right. The man could steal bases and hit home runs.
All right. This is good. I told you. You're going to like these today. These are good ones.
After the first inning, it's tied 1-1. Now up, the baseball fanatic, Kyle Lawson. Inning number two, top of the second inning. Okay, I'm sticking with the opening day trivia. There's only been one no-hitter in opening day history. Can you tell me who it was, how old he was, and who he threw it against?
How old he was and who he threw it against?
Yeah.
Man alive. Okay.
Right. I'll give it to you. Who's the only pitcher to throw an opening day no-hitter? I got him stumped.
Is it David Cohn?
You're gonna get mad at this one. Bob Feller.
Oh, Rapid Robert. Daggone it. Come on.
21 years old. He threw it against the Chicago White Sox at the historic Comiskey Park on April 16th, 1940.
Wow, that is a good one. You got me there. Okay, so we're still 1-1. Opening day, going for this. We talked about Chipper having 11 opening day starts with the Braves. Or excuse me, Chipper. What the heck am I talking about? Freddie Freeman with 11 opening day starts. Who has the most in Braves history?
Opening day starts for the Braves. Now, are we talking about the Boston Braves? We talking about the Milwaukee Braves? We talking about the
Atlanta Braves? I just said Braves, so use that how you may.
God, it's Henry Aaron.
Okay, there you go.
Since Henry Aaron,
he had 20.
Could this be the first? Could the coach upset the baseball fanatic?
You're freaking me out, I'll tell you that. So what do you got for me?
All right. Let's see. That would be too easy for him, okay?
Too easy. Okay, come on.
All right. Name the player or name the two players who have the most opening day home runs on the first day of the season. And how many did they hit?
Ooh.
I got him again. And I even told you this afternoon it's going to be opening day. You should have brushed up on it.
I know. Okay.
Two players tied. They both have the same amount of home runs, and it was on the first day of opening
day. So I got to name both players.
Yes, you got to name both players.
Oh, man alive. Okay, I think the number is three. Three home runs on opening day. Okay, so
if you can name the players, I'll give you the question. Don't worry about how many.
Okay.
All right, here's a hint. Who is the traditional, or used to be the traditional, opening day team in baseball?
Well, the Cincinnati Reds.
Okay. Who was a great player that played for the Cincinnati Reds?
Well, they've been around since 1869, so that's going to take a minute. So, all right, look, I'm just going to throw two names out there.
Go ahead.
Okay, for the Cubs, it was Carl Tuffy Rhodes who hit three home runs on opening day, and I think 95 or 96. Okay. The other one, I'm going to say Ken Griffey Jr. I'm just going to throw that out there.
You got half the question right. Ken Griffey Jr.
Oh.
The other person, think about a great Cincinnati Red who went on to play for the Cleveland Indians, was the first ball player manager.
Frank Robinson.
There you go. Now wait till I freak you out on this one. Three is not even close. Eight.
Five.
Eight. Three plus five is eight. They both hit eight opening day home runs.
Eight home runs in one game.
No. Not in the game. How many did they hit on opening day?
They each hit four. They each
hit eight. Eight opening days. Frank Robinson hit a home run.
How many home runs in a career did they have on opening day? I thought you were talking about how many in a game on opening day.
All right. Well, okay. The key to the question was name the players, okay?
So all right, fine.
You got Ken Griffey Jr., so I'm going to give you a point five, but I'm already up to 1.5.
Yeah, I was about to say, you're probably going to win this. Fine. Okay, here's your last question. The Yankees have the most World Series titles of all time. Name the team with the second most World Series victories of all time. World Series titles, I should say.
Yes, I know. I got to rephrase my questions better. I understand. You know, it's not the Red Sox. It's not the Dodgers. Okay, I got to really think about this. Ugh, this is a tough one. I got to go with the Redbirds out of St. Louis.
Oh, my God. Oh, you got me. It took you 4 years, and you finally get a victory. Good on you, coach.
You got me.
This is how we go into opening day.
Yes, okay. I win on opening day. You gotta love it. That's what opening day is all about: hot dogs, apple pie, baseball, and the coach beating the baseball fanatic in trivia.
Okay, so I think it's still about 55-1, but you know what? You've earned this one today.
Oh, let me see. We averaged, all right, you were leading 16-0 going into this because we did four shows every year.
So all right, I took the over. All right, that's my bet.
I never beat you. I never beat you. So you won last, so it was 17. You had won 17 straight. The coach broke the streak.
I'll still get you into Cooperstown. I wouldn't worry about it. My record's great. So, but coach, this has been a good one. And man, Thursday, I can't wait to just sit around on my couch, watch all the games. I'm really excited. My Cubbies play at 2:20. The Bravos play at 3:05. So I will have several devices up trying to catch all the action I possibly can. But
well, I'm going to buy an MLB pass for one day. I get the Yankees at 1:05. I get the Braves at 3:05. Maybe I'll check out the Cubbies a little along the way. But, you know, once again, excited about it. Opening day's here. We're going to get a full 162, as you say. And, you know, and hopefully by the middle or by the dog days of summer, we'll have full crowds going into the stadiums. That's all we can wish for.
I was about to say, just make sure everybody stays healthy. Hopefully, as the vaccines come out, more information comes out, be able to get some more fans into the ballpark. We'll certainly see how it goes. Going to be about 13,000 at Truist Park. Opening day for the Braves once they get back home from Philadelphia. But I'm really excited just to see some fans back in the stands. So really looking forward to it. And we're going to get back to some sense of normalcy here in Major League Baseball. And I'm so glad we get to talk about it every week.
So remember, opening week for the Braves, 3 in Philadelphia starting April 1st, 3 in Washington, D.C., and then April 10th, they'll be back at Truist Park at the Battery getting ready to play a big game for the Atlanta fans. Once again, you've been listening to the Who's on First Base baseball podcast with the coach, Carl DeMasi, and the baseball fanatic, Kyle Lawson. And it's opening day, April 1st. Make sure you head over to Coach's Corner, and you can watch any game you want on the gazillion TVs at Coach's Corner. This has all been part of the Coach's Corner Sports Network. And whatever you are doing today or tomorrow, always hit it at a park. And until next week, until we talk again, may it be your best week ever.